You're listening to The Comedy Cellar, live from the table on the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com.
It's The Comedy Cellar Show, live from the table on Sirius XM 99. This is Dan Natterman, and our regular listeners will know that if I am doing the introduction, that can only mean one thing, that once again, Noam Dorman has decided not to show up. Not sure why this time. Do you know why, Stephen?
Our
producer, Stephen Calabria.
I think it's Juanita's birthday.
Okay, it's Juanita's birthday. Last time, I believe he was in Russia. There's always something. We're a low-priority item for him, but that's okay because I have the situation in hand. I'm with... No, Gilbert, that's me and Noam bust each other's balls. That's kind of our thing, so don't be put off
by
it.
No, I was just about to leave angrily. Yeah, I was shocked and ready to go.
Well, you all know who my guest is today. It's Mr. Gilbert Gottfried, a legend. There's no other word for it. He's a legend.
You're a legend.
And I'm here because Gallagher, too, found something else to do.
All right. Well, Gallagher's not here, but you are. And we also have... Carmen Lynch is with us.
Not a legend yet, but happy to be with you.
We've had Carmen here in the past, and here she is again. You must have done a nice job because we invited you back. Gilbert's chomping at the bit to say something.
Now, Gallagher, ooh, thank you.
Yes, go ahead, Gilbert.
Gallagher and Gallagher 2, I find the most fascinating. They got to make a movie out of that.
See, well, are they brothers?
Yeah. There's Gallagher that everyone knows, and he has a brother who looks and sounds just like him. And he gave his brother permission to do his act around the country, and he would be billed as Gallagher 2. And part of the agreement was that he can't burst the watermelon. That's... the only thing he's not allowed to do. So Gallagher 2 went around the country. He dropped the 2 from his name and started doing the watermelon. And so
this went all the way to the Supreme Court.
It did go to court. It was like...
I believe Justice Ginsburg ruled in favor of Gallagher 2.
Yeah, because people were like, they were calling up. People were booking Gallagher 2. And saying we can get him so much cheaper than Gallagher 1.
I've actually been trying to sell my act for years because I've had it with comedy.
You
know, I've had enough. I think Gilbert and I might be on the same page. Gilbert is a subject of a new documentary, Carmen. I don't know if you've seen it. It's called Gilbert.
No, I have not seen
it. Yeah, well, it's a new documentary, and I saw it because I was invited to the Friars Club for the premiere.
I was not invited.
Okay. Well, I was invited.
I went out of my
Gilbert
way.
Gilbert was not invited.
Gilbert, you did not invite me.
Yes. I went out of my...
We're going to try to get dive deeply into Gilbert's life. It's probably not going to work because Gilbert generally doesn't answer questions.
And the documentary it's called Gilbert, and you could see it on the 29th. It'll start on Hulu.
Oh, on Hulu. Okay. Hulu. You have Hulu, don't you?
I have Hulu. I'm going to watch
it. This is a streaming service of some sort.
Yeah.
Internet-based streaming service. No, because one thing struck me of all the things in the documentary, a lot of interesting things, but you mentioned that, and I don't know if this was just for a laugh or if it was true, you mentioned that every time you do a gig, you're hoping that there's a fire.
Yeah.
And they come to you and say... You don't have to do the gig.
I have this fantasy when I'm waiting backstage that the manager will come back and say, you know, there was a fire or a flood, and so the show's over. Here's your check. Go home.
And now, is this true, or is this kind of an exaggeration to get a laugh?
No. I definitely get that more and more.
I've had that for years. I had that probably since I started. I wanted to be a sitcom star, a movie star, or something. I figured this was just a stepping stone.
That's what I thought. Yeah, here we are.
Here we are, many years later.
Do you still get nervous before you perform?
I think in some ways I get more nervous now than I used to. You know, people, I think it's supposed to be the other way around, where you know, when you're young and inexperienced, you're nervous, and then you get sure of yourself. With me, it would be like, I think years ago you could say, okay, you're going to be on stage, there's 10,000 people in the audience, and it's broadcast live all around the universe. And I go, yeah, all right, you know, and now I when I'm waiting backstage, I think, can I do this?
Well, I'm more nervous too. I think it's like Yosemite Sam, you know, when he didn't look down, he was able to stay in the air.
Right.
And as soon as he realized what the hell was going on, and I think more and more I'm realizing the insanity of it. And,
yeah,
and maybe
and,
that's
and,
what.
And
yeah.
Now you go,
and then I go right to the. So, Gilbert, would you, if I gave you a sufficient amount of money, whatever that sum would be, and this is a discussion we have a fair amount amongst ourselves, would you leave the business? If you didn't have to, I guess you feel you have to work to make money. I always figured, maybe you had enough, but maybe you don't.
Yeah, I quite often have that fantasy.
If I give you a cool $20 million, after-tax dollars, would I ever see you again on a stage?
You know, write me a check. I think I'll.
But there must be some part of you that feels joy underneath the anxiety, though, that keeps you doing this, or no?
I don't know. I remember years ago, I used to be addicted to it. It was like there could be a war going on, you know, with, you know, troops coming in and firing. I would go through the firing line to get to a comedy club to do it. And now I feel like, it's a nice day. I don't want to take a walk there.
Did you first hear of Gilbert from Beverly Hills Cop 2? That's, I think, what most people...
Or what was the one right after that? What?
Beverly Hills Cop 2?
What was it after that, though?
Beverly Hills Cop 3.
No.
Was there a Beverly Hills Cop?
It was Beverly Hills Cop, but there was something else,
too. No, Beverly Hills Cop 2.
Oh, Problem Child.
What? Problem Child.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that was Sidney Bernstein role where you were the accountant, the Jewish accountant. And it was maybe a 3-minute role. I don't know. What was it? 3 minutes?
Yeah.
And I mean, is it fair to say that that's kind of what, at least for me, this was what, 1987 or something? 88? I don't remember. But that's for me what made me a Gilbert Godfrey fan. I'd never heard of you, but I know you had done SNL, but I didn't know it.
And SNL was, it was the worst season.
You were on 1980 or 79.
Yeah. Oh, it was the... Because people hated the idea of a new cast coming in back. Now it's like, can you name one cast member of Saturday Night anymore? They change from week to week. Back then, it would be like if Friends at its peak, if all those... The cast members left, and there were a whole new group as Joey and Rachel and whatever. And they said, okay, just pretend you like them just as much as the originals. It was like Beatlemania, and you got rid of John, Paul, George, and Ringo and got four other. And so they were attacking the whole idea of Saturday Night Live going on without the recognizable names.
That was just after Chevy and that whole crew?
Oh, yeah, and Belushi and Aykroyd and Lorne Michaels. And, you know, and then when the show went on, it sucked. So that didn't help matters either. But, yeah, I got that part in Beverly Hills Cop 2. And we started, I remember sitting there with Eddie Murphy, and we started, like, ignoring the script and just playing around back
and forth.
So
you came up with that whole thing about if you put it in this hand.
Yeah.
And I don't know what was in this hand.
Yeah. And now people come up to me on the street and go like that.
Now, you set the Jewish people back a few years, but the good news is your career was launched at that point.
Some critics. I think said something like that. Like, it was like, I had never even heard of this Dusterma. I guess some...
It was like German propaganda magazine.
Yeah, yeah. It was like a Goebbels production.
Can I ask you, so what is the... when you said people come up to you on the street and like mention that you were in certain things, what is the one you get most often?
Cindy Bernstein.
That one I get... There's a bunch of... Problem Child gets a lot. What I found, too, is like Fort Fairlane was a disaster when it was released. But it built up a cult following over the years. Mm. So many things. People even come up to me who saw me in Are You Afraid of the Dark? That was a kid.
I don't know that one.
Yeah, it was like Twilight Zone for kids.
Okay.
That used to be on... And what's funny about that show, I was doing a guest spot there, and with me were two little boys. And one of the little boys was Ryan Gosling.
That yeah, that's I never knew about that one.
Yeah.
Another thing in the documentary that struck me is you did a gig in Philadelphia at Helium, I guess it was.
Uh-huh.
And you took the mega bus down.
Oh, yes.
Now, and I thought that was... I asked your wife... Is that a put-on, or does he really take the megabus?
No.
And she said you really take the megabus.
I've taken these cheap buses.
The megabus is like $20.
Yeah.
Instead of just springing, you know, for the train, which would be $100, or a driver, which would be $200.
I remember one time taking a mega bulk bus out to Albany, New York. And then on the way back, my bus got canceled. And I made the mistake of, someone said, they've got these Chinatown buses.
They're even cheaper.
Yes, even cheaper.
I'm assuming Gilbert's a wealthy man. No one knows for sure. But now, Gilbert, are you a man of some wealth? You're probably not going to answer that question.
But I will never do those Chinatown buses ever again, I'll tell you that.
All right, so you do have a line some.
Yeah.
You know, celebrity net worth, I know they're not accurate.
Are you looking up Gilbert's net worth?
I look it up because
right
but it's probably not accurate. But
why do you take the bus? Is that just to feel like...
I'm a cheap bastard.
He's a cheapskate.
Yeah.
He's got a pathological illness.
With me, getting something for free, like, you could book me, you know, on some job and say, here's a check for $100 million. Oh, and I'll throw in a carton of free gum. And to me, I'll go, oh, I got a free gum out of it.
Yeah.
Well, he's a gorgeous apartment. If you watch the documentary, I mean, it's a beautiful... And the elevator in the documentary opens up into the apartment, I believe. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So that's a big deal.
That's not Megabus material, but...
No. He's the only one on the Megabus with an elevator opening into his apartment. That I would be fairly certain of.
I'm the only one on the Megabus who has an apartment.
Yeah, yeah, right.
He's the only one on the Megabus without a roommate. It's mostly stupid. My niece took the Megabus to go to... Because she went to school in Philly, and she would take the Megabus down there, but she was a student with no income. She wasn't a household name.
But you have that apartment because you take the Megabus.
Well...
Oh, yeah.
I don't know about that.
Very good. Kidding.
Very good.
He also collects... And you'll see this in the documentary. I'm not going to talk too much about the doc because I want you to see it. But one other thing that struck me is that he does collect shampoo from hotel rooms.
When I go into a hotel, first thing I do is go into the bathroom and I'll see what they have there for me to take.
Now, have you been in therapy ever and discussed this? Or, of course, therapy is not a cheap endeavor.
Yeah. No, therapy costs too much money.
Okay, well, you know, this is his...
Can I ask you... Oh, sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
Did you learn anything about yourself that you didn't know before after the documentary was made?
The only thing I think I learned was, and I swear to God, this is true, I was watching myself the way I move around, and I swear I thought... Oh, my God, I walk like Red Fox did in Sanford and Son. Yeah, there was this kind of shuffle and this way he would have his legs move.
I've seen that, yeah.
And I thought, oh, my God.
Yeah, but you've seen yourself on screen before. You didn't notice the shuffle?
No, no. It's like, see, watching the documentary is painful for me. I'm fine if you want to cast me as the plumber on a sitcom,
right,
or show up as something in a movie. I'm fine. But watching me as me is painful.
Do you feel that way about watching your stand-up? Like, if you have a set that you listen to, or...
Oh, so, yeah. Really hard? A lot of, you know, everything.
Yeah.
Everything I watch, somebody be... You know, well, that's natural, where you just go, oh, I should have done that differently. Why didn't I go into this?
I watch myself, by should have done that differently, I mean my life.
You know,
yeah.
When I see my... Okay, here's something that gets me. People who say, I have no regrets. Is that possible that a person can have no regrets?
They're probably just saying that to make themselves feel better.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got more than a few, but I mean, maybe by that they meant that at the time, with the information they knew and with the person that they were,
yeah,
they made the decision that seemed right at the time. But rest assured, they made some. We all made some.
Or they've just never taken
terrible,
any chances. With
terrible decisions. Hmm.
But why dwell on those? Maybe it is.
Yeah,
maybe to just
they're just saying they're not worth. It's not worth dwelling on. I tend to be painfully enmeshed in the past.
Oh, me too.
Especially this time of year where I really take stock. You know, now it's what day is it? December 28th or 27th? Doesn't matter.
This is the worst time of year.
The fact is, it's the end of the year, and yeah. I used to say every year at this time, I would say to myself, "Next year is going to be my year." I haven't said that in a few years.
Has that made your life better?
Because every year is never my year. I said, you know what? I finally learned my lesson. It's probably not going to be my year.
Well, it's kind of like a New Year's resolutions. Like, some people for years go, okay, I'm going to get in shape. I'm going to lose weight. I'm going to give up smoking. And then one day they wake up, it's New Year's, and they go, I'm not going to even kid myself. I'm going to smoke. I'm going to lie around the house.
Yeah, yeah. You learn after a certain time. You know, you learn that you're going to continue doing the same shit you've been doing.
It's also hard to start over in the middle of winter in New York City. I mean, to go to the gym on January 1st sounds horrible.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it is bad gym weather. That's for sure. Yeah. But by the way, Gilbert has his own podcast. Called Gilbert's
Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast,
and his specialty is older celebrities. I guess I don't know if that's your specialty or that's who's available.
Oh,
but you know, you basically if you're under 80, you're not welcome there.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know what the average age of your guests is, but it's about 80. Would it?
We've had maybe 10 guests who are in their 90s. I mean, Dick Van Dyke was on the show, Carl Reiner, Norman Lear. Marty Allen from Allen and Rossi.
I don't even know who that is.
Oh. He used to go, hello there. That was his big...
I don't know. But, and I sat in recently, you had some guy from The Rascals, the singer.
Oh, yeah.
I forgot his name.
Oh, God. Yes, and he was good, too. We had two of the monkeys, Mike Nesmith and Mickey Dolenz.
Well, they're in their 70s, probably.
Yeah, we had Tommy James, who used to sing, I Think We're Alone Now.
Before the Tiffany version.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously.
And he was an amazing interview.
Did he do anything else besides Tommy James? I Think We're Alone Now?
I Think We're Alone. Oh, and
Moni.
Oh, okay. Who do you have coming up? Any tantalizing, titillating sneak preview of some of the guests?
Oh, God. I don't know. I get it all mixed up who was on and who's coming up. But, yeah, Tommy James used to be... In this music label he was signed with called Roulette, that was total mobster. It was this guy named Morris Levy who ran it, and complete mobster.
Well, I guess a lot of show business in those days were, I mean...
Yeah, run by the mob.
Was run by the mob.
Well, that's where the term stand-up comedian comes from.
No, it does. What are you talking about?
The term stand-up comedian, like comedians used to stand up and do comedy in these like mob-run clubs, and they'd say, oh, this guy, he's a stand-up guy. He's a comic. Yeah. He's a stand-up comic.
I don't know.
Stop it.
That sounds like apocryphal to me.
No. Okay, I'll look it up right now.
Yeah, you better look that up.
Yeah, look it up.
Because Stevens often, you know.
They've used that as a pun in a million times.
I always assumed it was because we stand up. We're literally standing up.
But so if someone was sitting down while they were doing stand-up.
But that's the exception to the rule. I mean, there's a few stand-up comics that sit down, but the vast majority stand up. So therefore, it's a stand-up, comedian. Like you could have a sit down, let's have a sit down dinner, and somebody has a bad back and is standing. He's the exception.
I just saw a movie recently on TV called Stand Up Guys, and I just watched it today, and the cast is Al Pacino, Christopher Walken, and Alan Arkin. So you figure with a cast like that, how could it be bad? And it was bad. It was really awful.
But Gilbert's sort of a, you love like old Hollywood, old, you know, he's sort of obsessed with, do you see any new shit that comes out?
Oh, wait. We also had on Art Matrano.
I don't know.
Art Matrano, his big thing, he go up like in a tux. And he'd do, like, a magic act where he didn't have any props with him. He'd just, like, smack his hands together, hold up a finger, put it down, and then his finger would be up on his other hand. And these would be the tricks, and the whole time he'd be going, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da- Billy Saluga, who built a career. It's miraculous. It's almost evil. He built a career off going, well, you can call me Ray.
Oh, I think I've heard of it.
You could call me Jay, but you don't have to call me Johnson.
Yeah, I think I heard of that guy. That's a 70s thing.
He was on every variety show and commercials.
Well, there was that girl recently that built a career kind of on Cash Me Outside. How about that?
Yeah.
Remember the Cash Me Outside girl?
No, who's that?
She was on Dr. Phil, and she was, and the audience was like coming at her because she was a troubled teen, you know. Dr. Phil has on these troubled teens that he sends them to boot camp.
Right.
So the audience was like, you need to respect your mother, and, you know, you think you're all that. And she said, Cash Me Outside, how about that?
Oh, yeah.
And it became viral, and then she went on Instagram and got like a million followers. And so I think she sells ads. I think she does some rap. She's got a musical deal or something.
That's frustrating.
A rap deal. And here we are, you know, trying to write jokes. And you got the Cash Me Outside girl.
That's another thing that I found. It's like club owners have told me they book people from the internet. And on the internet, you'll find some girl whose big thing is squeezing her blackheads, or some guy who could, you know, shove grapes in his nose or whatever. And
it goes viral.
Yeah.
Viral. They're the ones who can fill the seats, you know, if they have followers.
That's it. They say, you know, they have nothing to do on stage, nothing to talk about. But when they book them, it's a mob scene.
Well, you've got to go viral. And that's why I used to half jokingly, you know, when I did Letterman, I used to say, you know, instead of doing my act, I should do something crazy.
Right.
I should take a crap on the stage or whatever. And have a friend in the audience film it on their phone and put it on the internet.
And that would
go viral.
It would go viral, but your window, there's a limit. I don't know if you'd still be famous today if you did that.
Well, no, I'd be living in Tahiti with my retirement money. I don't need to be. I only need a year in this business to make a few million bucks and then cash out.
And nowadays, like with, you know, Jimmy Fallon and shows like that, and Saturday Night, too, they'll do stuff with the main intention the show is the last thing.
Right, they want to go viral.
Yeah, they want to go viral. What appears on TV, they don't care. But what that one thing that'll go viral, that's it.
Do you have Instagram or Twitter presence?
Yeah, I have. I barely understand what any of it is. But, you know, I have, well, my Twitter is Real Gilbert. And I have a website, GilbertGottfried.com, that I bought from a guy in Thailand.
His name was Gilbert Gottfried,
He was just a sit-in on these names.
Oh, okay. People used to buy up names.
Yeah.
And how much, can I ask, how much did he charge you?
It was a double insult. Number one, that I had to buy my name, and two, how cheaply I got it. And he threw in a Yakov Smirnoff.
I think Facebook had to buy Facebook.com. I don't know what they paid for it, but there was another guy with Facebook.com at the time. And
yeah, like early on.
People were buying up names.
Yeah, you know? They would call themselves General Motors.com.
You know, I bought Pan Am just before it went out of business, so wasn't a very good investment. But, you know, I feel like websites are kind of old school. I mean, I have a website. I've abandoned it. My website is like an abandoned. It's like a ghost town. It's like there's dates there from like, you know, 5 years ago. Like a tumbleweeds blow. I've just kind of abandoned my website.
Yeah, even news sites now. Like the mantra is social is the new front page.
Yeah,
like,
I don't
social media
feel that anybody cares about a website. Maybe they do. I just put it on Twitter. But I don't even put it on Twitter because I'm like such a bad marketer. But theoretically, you put it on Twitter.
And what's so weird is, like, the minute I feel like I'm on the newest, hippest thing on the internet, I'll say it to someone and they'll go, oh, my God, you're still using that? You know, it's like it becomes outdated in 2 seconds.
It moves so fast. You know, I mean, I don't do do people use Snapchat for marketing or that's just for fun?
Snapchat? You can use anything for marketing.
You don't really hear much about that now because Instagram stories are a thing. You know, it just feels like every 6 months there's a new thing and you have to learn it.
Well, that's why I bought a quarter of a Bitcoin. No, I bought almost a whole Bitcoin, but I sold most of it just because this time I want, and it'll probably go to zero because I'm involved, but just because for the first time I want to be in on something before everybody's in on it.
And how did you get in before everybody?
And I'm already in on it too late because the time to be in on it was a few years ago, but This guy at Santa New York, James Al Tutcher, who was a guest on this show, he's like a cryptocurrency guy, and he was like, oh, this is, you know, this is a big thing, whatever.
And are you happy you did it, or how?
Well,
you
I made money. I made money, and then I sold some of it. And I bought some a Litecoin, which is another crypto, and then I bought something called Ripple. That's the name. It's called Ripple. Sounds like a cheap booze, but anyway.
See, that I hear about. But I think now would be, worthless to try to invest on it.
Well, I put in, like, I got in a month ago, and it doubled even since a month ago. And then I pulled out my initial investment. I left, you know, some still in there. But, it might be too late. I don't know. Yeah. I got in. There was still room to grow, but who knows? And we're going to have James on soon.
Yeah, right,
talk,
he'll be on.
To talk more about for those audience members that are into crypto, the crypto
one
space.
One thing I want to say, so we were talking about stand-up.
I'm sorry, I got distracted with my crypto.
No, it's fine. Carmen actually has a special that we should talk about.
Oh, we'll do that. Yeah, we could do that.
That's nice.
And Carmen, oh, you have a on what?
It's an album that's out, and it was just listed as one of the top 10 of this year. So
listed by who?
The Interrobang.
The Interrobang. Okay, yeah. I've heard of the Interrobang. Is that a credible source?
Yes.
I don't know.
It's like it's an industry publication.
Yeah.
Well, good for you.
Thank you.
Yeah, but this is not a special. This is an album.
Yeah. Is that okay?
Was it your first?
Yeah, it was my first
album. Yeah, but have you done a Netflix or any one of them? Now everybody's doing Netflix
specials.
No,
I haven't done one of those yet.
As they haven't called?
Yeah. They don't remember the name anymore.
Yeah, they do.
Oh, that's for me now. That's Netflix calling.
I don't know. Netflix might be. You think Netflix is now too many people have
so
done Netflix specials
with stand-ups? I mean, of course, if they called right now, it'd be amazing, right? But there are a lot of specials on there.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
What's the next thing?
Yeah, I
Netflix?
Feel like, you know, somebody once told me you got to skate where the puck is going, not where the puck is.
But how do you know where the puck is going?
Well, that's the trick, isn't it?
It's who you hang with, I guess, maybe, or who you know, or how much you...
I don't know.
I hang with 90-year-olds, so I don't think...
Are those your friends socially, or just the people you have on? What is your social, like, I know you have your wife and you have your kids, and my guess is you don't want to delve too much into that because you're a private person, but...
It's weird.
Who do you hang with?
I don't know that I hang that much. Like, if I'm thrown in a situation where it's like with famous people, if I'm thrown in a situation with, like, celebrity who I know, then I'm glad to see them. But I you know, it's like, you know, on reality shows where they'll say to someone, okay, we need you to get in touch with as many of your celebrity friends now within the next 15 minutes. And I go, I don't know the numbers of like 99% of the ones that I know.
Well, no one knows numbers anymore. It's all on your phone.
Yeah.
But you're saying,
oh, that's true too. See, that everything's different. It's like, I feel like the exact second I had show business vaguely figured out, that all changed. You know, I used to think of it in terms, well, it was TV and movies, and you understood that. But now it's like, I don't get it.
Now you have to have your own web series,
yeah,
and your own
well,
Instagram.
Well, you can get famous, as we were saying, from a YouTube video or an Instagram, an Insta, as the kids call it, account. I don't say Insta because that's... Sounds like an old guy trying to be cool.
Right.
Yeah.
But Instagram, the young kids call it, hit me up on Insta, you know.
I have a question, actually. So you were talking about how so many people nowadays just do things to go viral. And those are things oftentimes that we're probably going to look at in a few years and totally cringe.
Now,
you were talking about some of the guests on your show and so many of your friends who are in their 80s and 90s. What stuff from, like, the 50s and 60s and 70s, comedy-wise, do you look at and just cringe? Because either by today's standards, it's not cool anymore, or it just wasn't funny at the time. And that goes for everybody, by the way.
Well, see, I'm happy that there was no internet when I was starting out in those first couple of years, because I would hate to see what I was doing back then. Because, you know, you have no idea. You start out, you have no idea what a joke is. It's like...
I had a catchphrase for some. My friend Louis Schaefer told me, you ever meet Louis Schaefer? He's like a effeminate heterosexual. But he said, you need to have catchphrase so they remember you. You got good jokes, but they don't, you know. So my catchphrase was, I never learn. And I use it for about a week and try to shoehorn all my jokes into I never learn format. I go, I never learn. but I eventually I say,
but you learned.
This is too confining.
Oh, yes.
Eventually I figure this is too confining, you know. But you're trying at the beginning. I also did like voices a little bit. But you're trying to figure out who you are at the beginning.
Yeah, it's like that kind of thing where you know you want to be on stage and tell jokes, but you're not sure what a joke is. And then after a while, you're going, moon rhymes with June. And so that's kind of funny. I guess that's a joke.
Do you remember
when did you first start with your current style, which is yes, you know, that whole thing? Which is sort of how you talk anyway, but it's not,
yeah,
it's an exaggeration. But was that immediate when you started?
No. And it's funny. There was never a conscious decision. I just remember I woke up one day and said, oh, that's been my delivery for a while now. And it was never, like, thought out. I never thought, you know, people say to me, oh, did you notice your relatives acted that way and then you saw it? And I, no.
Do you remember your first time on stage?
I was. It's funny because I remember it at one club in the village. My sister remembers it somewhere else. So I don't remember exactly which club it was, but I remember it was just, you know, some club. They had a list, and you, whenever you got there, you wrote your name on the list. And when they got to your name, they said, and coming up so-and-so.
Did you have bringers then? Like, when I started, there was something called bringers, who, if you're not a comedy
person. Oh, no, they didn't have that here.
You had to bring three friends, or however many friends you had to bring, right?
Is that, you had to really, like, distribute them so you could do more shows and not bring them all at one show.
But they'd all come at once anyway because they tell each other. I was in law school at the time, and I would tell three people, hey, could you come to my show? I need three people. And they'd end up telling the whole class, and 100 would show up, not literally, but a lot.
Yeah.
And then I blow my load, and the next time, nobody wants to come. But in any case, that's how we started with bringing our own audience. And my first time was at Stand Up New York, and I brought...
That was my first.
Oh, was it? I forgot. I think it was Scott Kranz. Anyway, I had a great set. Because the audience was all friends of comics, and they were, and I thought to myself, "Here we go. It won't be long now, you know, before I start making money."
Yeah.
And it was a little longer than I had anticipated.
That's the, one of those early lessons you get. That, you know, when you start out in those first couple of years, you'll do a set that just everything, you know, when you just like, you know, switching the mic from one hand to the other. It gets a tremendous laugh and a round of applause. And you go, okay, well, that's it. I'm a star now. And then, of course, the next day you go on and people are screaming for you to get off.
Could it be that, did we hear the laughter at the same level back then? Like, I have memories very early on of killing. But it could be that I wasn't killing at all, but just that my ears were not attuned to what killing is. And then maybe they weren't laughing that hard, but they were...
Have you ever done a show where the laughter is almost too much? And, like, now it's okay because you're used to it. And you're like... But at the beginning where you're like, whoa, I wasn't ready for that. It's almost, like, intimidating.
No. I don't find that. What I do find is sometimes the laughter is so much I feel uneasy.
Yeah.
Because I feel uneasy with my own power.
Maybe that's
because
it. Because
I have deep-seated, I don't know what you would
call it. Insecurities?
Well, I feel, I don't want to, I have no killer instinct. Mm-hmm. When I used to play tennis, poorly, but I played tennis, whenever I started winning, I'd feel sorry for the other player. And then I wouldn't want to win. And I think that, does this resonate with anybody? Not that I care about them, I just had a weird, I didn't like being number one in any, I mean, I certainly wasn't number one, but I didn't like being...
Why? Because that's more responsibility or all the eyes are on you?
I'm not sure why. But sometimes when the audience is laughing really, really hard, I feel that similar kind of, like, I need to pull back because this is too much.
Yeah.
I don't know if that resonates with anybody. Because that's just a me thing, you know? And then it turns out the person goes on after me, kills just as hard, and it was, you know, so, you know, because we tend to all kill and bomb. I find at the Comedy Cellar, we tend to kill and bomb together, generally. Yeah. You know. And speaking of the Comedy Cellar, Gilbert doesn't work. I don't know if he wants to work here. He doesn't, but he'd certainly be welcome to, but not that I'm the owner or the booker.
Gilbert, I saw you at the Underground, a couple years ago? It was for, I think, Attell's, like, Live at the Underground or whatever.
Yeah. But is just something you're not interested in doing would be to work here when you happen to be in town? You
know? It's strange. It's like that addiction. It used to be, no matter what, I could have a 500-degree fever. and you could say, you want to go on? Oh, yeah. And now it's like when I, oh, here's something weird. When I go on, now they'll recognize me. So when I walk out, I'll get a big round of laughs and applause.
When you get on stage, yeah.
And I feel like that makes me uncomfortable.
The bar is too high.
Yeah, I feel like, no, I just want to try out some stuff that might suck.
You know, all the celebrities that come to work here, I mean, there's quite a few that come. Many of them, they get on stage, they have that, the audience goes berserk. They see a big celebrity, and the first thing the celebrity will say is, lower your expectations.
Yes.
There's a few of them that say that, and I think that that's what you're getting at, is they want that bar a little bit lower, because, okay, I cannot possibly compete with my level of celebrity.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, when you're unknown, you could go up on stage and bomb, and it doesn't matter. And then when they're expecting so much...
But I feel like if I was super famous and I was here, I would probably bring notebooks on stage all the time, because that would just basically say, lower your expectations.
Even if you wouldn't
I'm
use
I'm trying. Yeah. But
even
I
if
mean,
you don't even use a notebook, the notebook...
It looks like you're just trying out stuff.
You're looking
like,
in the notebook, and the pages are empty. And you're doing... But it lets the audience know.
Yeah, I'm just here to try new stuff. So chill out.
That's a good idea. Gilbert was never a notebook kind of a guy.
No.
You know, I can't imagine Gilbert with a notebook.
No. I could bring a blank notebook and start staring.
Well, you're certainly welcome to come hang here and get free food.
Yes, yeah.
but so, Gilbert, you're saying that your level of success has lowered your desire to do stand-up because it's not as big a challenge anymore.
Yeah, I
Did
don't
he say that?
No, it's kind of like now when I go on there, they see someone recognizable, so they're expecting it to be like, I mean, I remember last, you know, one of the appearances I made here, then on Twitter, some guy tweeted, what was that? And it's like, what that was is trying something that I haven't been doing for 50 years that wasn't totally polished. You know, they expect it to be like, you know, like ready for like an HBO special.
Well, I think the key there is don't look at Twitter.
Yeah. Yo, yeah.
You or know. Don't respond, because that's usually what they want.
Exactly.
Oh, that's the worst. Yeah.
Now, do you get recognized on the Megabus?
Yeah.
You do. What do they say to you?
The context is weird, though, you know, so they're not expecting Gilbert. But anyway, yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes when you don't expect to see somebody, it's hard. They're harder to recognize.
Yeah. That's why I'm thinking maybe, is that why you take it, too?
That's
yeah.
So you can have some privacy.
That would be when you're really desperate for recognition.
Like if Obama came in here and sat down, I bet nobody would bother him. Because they're like, that can't possibly be Obama eating that chicken platter.
Yes.
Well, Carmen, so Gilbert, you were saying that as a person of notoriety, it's not good for you to get up on stage with such high expectations. Carmen, from your point of view, when you get up and you're relatively junior here, you've been here, what, 2-3 years now? Mm-hmm. Do you feel a big expectation to kill because this is the Comedy Cellar? And so,
yeah, I mean, they have a new joke night here, so I just do my new jokes there or I do them at other spots. But here, I do want to do well. So, I think certain comedians can do new jokes here, but I'm not like, you know, I'm not worried that I can't do that. I'm not.
Carmen and I feel, because we're not celebrities, so we don't get the carte blanche of the celebrity. We feel we really need to kill hard.
Yeah.
Or they'll stop using us here. At the other clubs, we don't feel that. It's like, you know, they don't have the same expectations. But here, the Comedy Cellar, they want everybody to just go, bah, 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 bah.
And they want that sound.
So that I, you know, I don't typically do new jokes. I slip one in.
Every once in a while.
Well, I sandwich it in between two surefire jokes so that there's momentum. Because you can't just start off with a new joke. You need momentum and confidence. And then I'll slip it in. And then sometimes it's like the contrast is stark between the new one
oh my
and what
God,
surrounds
yeah.
it. You know, they're howling, and then you do a new one, and cricket.
You know what gets me when you have those audiences where you can't build up a flow with them. It's like you could do 10 jokes that they love and are falling off their chairs with, and then you do a bad one afterwards, and you lose them. There's no goodwill.
There's no momentum.
Yeah.
You figure they'll give you a little something because you've delighted them now for 15, 20 minutes. They forget your name in mid-act.
Each line you say is an audition
to get them.
Or the opposite, where you're just doing jokes and you're killing, and then you just breathe or move, and they love it. And you're like, God. Yeah.
And those are those sets that fool you early on, where you think, okay, I'm a star. I made it.
Well, that's what I thought, you know. But
so many people who don't work in comedy, though, think that, like, you have to practice or do stand-up for, like, let's say 8-10 years, and then you have it down. So then it's always surprising to people to see a professional stand-up comic get up and bomb. But that's a pretty big misconception, isn't it? Because you get, like, if you're trying out new material constantly, you're always bombing.
Yeah.
But I never do enough new material that it's going to... I mean, sometimes you bomb because the audience just doesn't like you, whatever. But I if I do a new joke, it's usually a couple. Not like a whole set worth.
Right.
So that I usually, especially here where the audience is good, it's not going to be generally a complete bomb unless they just hate me anyway, which happens, I guess, from time to time, you know. But
the worst, though, is that people think it's so easy to be a comedian that they see you have a bad set and they just think you're horrible because they don't even know all the variables that go into it, you know? Like, that happened to me once where my sister's friends came and I bombed, not here, in, like, Savannah, Georgia or something. And I know they were like, you've been doing this for so many years.
Well,
and
I don't like people that are relatives or old friends in the
worst. Worst.
I know.
I freeze up. My aunt, I was doing a show in Florida. I said, anybody here from Canada? And I hear you. But yeah, I'm from Canada. And it was my aunt who's from Canada. And like I was, you know, I had to take a few seconds to get my head back on straight.
I'm the same way. I hate how I'd rather perform in front of strangers all the time.
Oh, absolutely.
And they think they're there to support. They think they're there for moral support.
Yes. I don't know how many times people that I've known have shown up and really thought.
You're happy to see them.
Yeah. And I'm not. Yeah. I don't want anyone I know there.
I've used the line, it's sold out so many times. Just a lie. Sorry, it's sold out.
If they insist on coming, I say, for the love of God, sit in the back.
Yeah.
But I don't want you right in the front row.
The best audience members, though, aren't they? Because they are pulling for you in a way that normal people aren't.
Maybe, but it's not worth it if you bomb and you feel like
And you're distracted. You're distracted. Like Aunt Susie's in the back row.
And Aunt Susie's judging me, and Aunt Susie's going to tell my mother that I've wasted my life. This is what goes through my head in any way.
Right.
In any
it's just a distraction that's in your head during your jokes.
Yeah.
You're not fully present.
The people who come up to you like that after the show, after you bomb, and go, you know, the stage was very nice, very colorful.
Well, they'll say, I thought you were good.
Yeah, oh, yes.
Only you could have done that material.
Yeah.
Or they'll give you, like, a soft, positive heckle that they think helps the show, and that doesn't at all. They'll be like, I get that, you know, and you're like, shut up.
Yeah.
You're not helping.
How long how long are you usually dating someone before you invite them to a show?
I don't invite.
I often meet them at the show. So I guess it would be...
Or I guess it varies from person to person.
How do you think I get laid? Not because I have any game.
Facebook game.
They're in the audience. My Facebook game is all right, but that usually comes as a consequence of my stage game.
Oh, okay. So,
you know, after the show, I'll say, so, you on Facebook? Can I hit you up on Insta?
That's another thing that's different about today's comedy, too, is that you didn't have that in the 80s. Like, if you met someone at a show, you met them there.
Yeah.
And that was the last you were going to see of them. As opposed to now, where you can get in touch with them.
Well, you would get a
later.
Phone number in the old days, and you would do as Gilbert was. We were talking before the show. You would be shaking like a leaf before you called them.
Yeah, it was like the worst thing in the world. You'd have this phone number, and you'd be by the phone, and you go, "Should I call her today? I mean, or should I wait till tomorrow? Well, all right, I'll call her today." But let me wait till the end of this TV show, and then I'll call her.
And it was a horrible. Like, what did you even talk about? Like, you didn't want to say right away when she answered the phone, "Hey, you want to go out?"
Or yeah.
So you had to come up with some small talk. But
that's
everybody knew
worst.
Where it was going.
Yeah.
It was just like, just get to it already. You can, "Hey, so what's up?" "Oh, not much. How you doing?"
Do you remember that?
It was horrible. It was horrifying.
It was horrifying. But the anticipation. Know? Do you remember the anticipation of going out or going to work or whatever, and then coming home to see if you had any messages?
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and you saw the light flickering? Like, yeah. There's a message on the answer machine.
And well, I would call in for my messages, you know, obsessionally. Yeah.
And I remember when I would call a girl and I'd hear the phone ringing, I would go, "Oh, God, please don't be home." Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there a difference between, I imagine that you, Dan, or Gilbert, you guys, you know, flirting with people in the audience and getting a date out of it, is that different from the number of people that, Carmen, you would do that with?
Like, I think it's different for women. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe other women do like to date people in the audience, but I've never been attracted to that.
To the sort of guy that's going to hit on the comedian who's on stage?
No, because I feel like the ones that I have... I mean, I've gone out with guys that have written me or talked to me after a show. But I found that most of them like the girl on stage, and then it just becomes a podcast. Like, they just want to talk to me about how I write my jokes or... You know, it's just...
But what's wrong with that, though? I mean, they're interested in you, and they're interested in what you do.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just...
If you were a guy, you would play through that just for the sex.
Totally, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
But that's... And therein lies the difference.
Yes.
Although our friends from the Guys We Fuck podcast would argue that the difference is merely cultural.
Yeah.
You know, those girls from the Guys We Fuck podcast, they feel that the differences between men and women sexually are all cultural. But in any case...
No, I think you're born with those differences.
Well, what Noam and I were arguing on that episode. But,
I mean, it's I've gone out with guys that I met at a bar. That's really no different. It's just a guy at a bar, a guy at a show, big deal. But I think once I started doing stand-up, I don't know, I just was never... I don't think girls... Maybe I shouldn't speak for all women, but we don't get hit on as much as men do. And the ones that hit on us, they're not always the ones you want to go out with.
Well, I think, and I've said this before, that, you know, when you ask women, what traits in a man do you find attractive? Oftentimes, sense of humor is high on the list.
Yes.
I think it's total, complete
and Gilbert doesn't buy it.
What?
But
yeah. Complete horseshit.
Really? Why?
Because I think my favorite was Rod Stewart. You know, he was the biggest rock star. And he married this, I think, I forget her name, like...
Morgan something? Or
Hunter something.
Yes, Rachel Hunter.
Rachel Hunter.
And she was a supermodel. And she said, "Rod Stewart is living proof that a man can laugh you into bed." And I'm thinking, oh...
What?
So she didn't know he was the biggest rock star in the world. She didn't know he had billions of dollars. She didn't know how powerful he was. It was all his... And I'm thinking, you know, I'll bet you... I don't say I'm the greatest comic on the planet, but I'll bet you I've got funnier jokes than Rod Stewart.
Well, it's also status, and he's got, you know, power.
Yeah.
He's a
I think it's a factor, but, you know, you got to, I mean, there's numerous factors. But I do think it's more important, a sense of humor is more important for a woman than
Absolutely.
It is for a man.
Absolutely. Yes.
I mean, you know, it may not be the number one.
And for you guys, it's attractiveness.
Unfortunately,
absolutely.
Yes. Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't make the rules, Carmen. If I did, we'd all get laid, no problem.
I'm not complaining. But I don't mind liking men for their sense of humor. I don't need a man to look like George Clooney to date him.
I'd rather look like George Clooney.
And I hope my boyfriend's not listening because I think he's really hot. But I think sense of humor is...
And it's less common,
it's
too,
isn't
it, right?
What?
Being really funny is less common than being really good looking.
For men?
Yeah. Or would you say that's true?
It depends. I mean, yeah, I guess it depends. I mean,
well, it depends how good looking you're saying. If you're talking about Brad Pitt in his 30s, then that's very rare.
Well, Mel Brooks said that, you know, all those tall, handsome guys tried to get with Anne Bancroft, and she didn't go for any of them. She went with the small, funny guy.
Yeah.
But I think that's an exception to the rule.
You think so?
Yeah. Yeah,
I don't know.
You don't know?
I think most, maybe I just strongly believe I've dated mostly shorter guys.
Well, everybody, I mean, you're, how old are you?
I'm 6 feet tall.
Yeah.
And
so
most
guys
of them have been very funny. And this is not an insult to any of them, but I mean, I don't date Ken dolls or chiseled men or anything. You know what I mean? And the ones that I did date like that, they didn't last.
Yeah, you're a comic. You value...
But even before stand-up, I just always would rather just have a really funny personality or just a, you know, an interesting person.
Do you think most
women
are that way?
Gilbert is still skeptical, but...
Yeah, 100%.
But then again, Gilbert has an attractive wife, if I may say so.
So basically, what we're telling you is if you want to get laid, go out and get the Joey Adams joke book.
I wasn't familiar with Joey Adams' stand-up, was he?
Me either, actually.
He was See, these are my references.
He was Jeb. I just know him as Cindy Adams' husband.
Would you go out with a woman who was very funny and mildly attractive?
No.
No.
Unfortunately. Like I said, I don't make the rules. It's a terrible world.
What God, if she was gorgeous but stupid?
I'll take it. Every guy.
I'm not saying a one-night thing because I get it.
Well, no,
but like, did you date her for a couple years?
Maybe not a couple years.
Absolutely.
Yeah, after a while. But see, this is another thing with guys. She could be absolutely gorgeous. But then, in like a relatively short amount of time, you go, all right, I had that.
Yeah.
Don't they get uglier over time if there's nothing inside?
They just get blander.
They get bland, not ugly, but...
It's like, you know, I love when people will say, geez, what was Billy Joel thinking when he split up with Christy Brinkley? And I'm saying,
People say that?
Yeah.
I never heard that.
And I'll know exactly what he was thinking. He was thinking, okay, you know, I had sex with her when she was the most gorgeous girl on the planet. And then I experienced it. Okay, on to the next one.
All right. No, I don't. I never heard anybody say that.
But that's more about monogamy.
I heard most people say, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know.
You think that's more about monogamy?
I'm just kidding.
But anyway, have you met Billy Joel?
That's
one of my
Billy
dream
Joel.
Like celebrities to meet. Would be Billy Joel. So anyway, if he's listening, we tried to have his daughter on the show, you know, but she didn't want to come on either. But next, maybe he's got a second cousin we can. Pardon?
We're
almost done. Gilbert, so Gilbert, now any thoughts that you'll ever retire, or are they gonna just drag you off stage in a body bag?
I guess they'll drag me off. I kind of think so now.
You know, when you're shitting yourself on stage.
Yeah.
But that's the point where you go viral, Gilbert.
Yes.
Yes, you'll be at your. that would be a. If
that
somebody,
would be.
You'll, then you won't be able to ride the Megabus anymore.
you'll go viral, but. You'll be at that age where you don't know what your name is,
right.
But you're gone viral.
Yeah, I guess when I don't remember my jokes is when I'll... Actually, that's not true. If I ever make real money, I could give it up.
Really? See, yeah. I think it's just kind of fun to go up there.
I would come here to do stand-up here at the Cellar, but I would not be doing, full headliner sets.
But you'd still be doing stand-up.
I would be doing it on a 10-minute, 15-minute per set basis, and I would probably continue with the podcast.
With me, it would be 10 minutes a year.
I saw you at Caroline's years ago, and you got up on stage, and the first thing you said was, "Okay, you came to see me, you saw me, now go home."
Yeah.
It resonated, but I felt like you meant it.
Yes.
I don't know if you did, but anyhow, so that's it for us. You know, I know Carmen's a big fan of our podcast, and I know you love the interplay with me and Noam.
I'm a little bummed he wasn't here.
He wasn't here today because I think Mila has a tea party or something, or he's got something to do. But I hope you enjoyed it anyway.
I did. It was fun to hang with you guys.
How do you think I did solo?
You did pretty well. I've listened to some of yours alone.
My solo work.
Yeah, your solos. Your gnome freeze.
Usually I do a classic rock block.
Yeah. No, it's good.
Anyhow. and Stephen Calabria... sitting in. Thank you very much for
my pleasure.
Your insights. It's always good to hear from a non-comic and your commentary. And Gilbert, thank you for stopping by. Once again, the documentary is Gilbert.
And on the 29th, it'll be available on Hulu.
Hulu, that's pay for service, Hulu?
Yeah, I guess. I have no idea. Okay. I know it'll be on Hulu starting
the
29th.
I'm going to watch it this weekend. Oh, the 29th. Oh, I'll be at the Funny Bone in Dayton. I'll watch it there.
Yeah.
The Funny Bone. Now, would you still be doing the Funny Bone in Dayton if you made a lot of money? I give you $2 million tax free. Are you going to the Funny Bone in Dayton? I give it to you right now. Do you call up the Funny Bone in Dayton and say...
I would still go. If you gave it to me right now, I wouldn't cancel on them.
You wouldn't cancel. See, I would cancel.
Really?
I
wouldn't cancel.
I would cancel right as they're saying, "Ladies and gentlemen, and then you give me the check."
I mean, my schedule might change in 2018, but I'd probably keep this one.
Okay.
Yeah.
And my podcast, Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast... Twitter, Real Gilbert, and GilbertGottfried.com.
And I'm at Lynch Carmen. Dance Like You Don't Need the Money is my album on iTunes. And CarmenLynch.com. My website is still on, Dan.
Okay, all right. And I'm not going to plug my shit. I do because whatever. I'll do it next week. Anyhow, Happy New Year, everybody, also. We'll see you. We'll see you, I guess, in 2018, which will... may or may not be my year, but again, I've stopped saying that. So, till next time, everybody. Bye-bye.